Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I do not have ADHD, as far as I know. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and anyone who listens to this show knows that I do. Possibly before I knew some of you. It's not subtle.
Yeah, well, since you got your diagnosis and I've been learning more about it from you, sometimes I'll be, like, watching a show or something, and I'll be like, this person seems like they have ADHD. Like, just something about, like, the way that that type of brain seems to, like, think and process information. I feel like I can sort of spot it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that they were talking about in the book I was reading today. Because they said it's one of those things that once you kind of start to know the traits to it, you start to see it everywhere. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, ah.
Yeah, so anyway. We did an episode a while ago about ADHD. If you want to go look it up, it's mm-hmm. called Lady HD, and that's because it was an interview between you and Rachel Rose, who is a fellow sex educator and sex writer who also has ADHD, and it was a really interesting conversation. I had a good time editing that one. But we wanted to do another one that's kind of more of a deep dive on, like, how it manifests in sex and relationships for you specifically, and also mm-hmm. Answer some listener questions about all that stuff as well, because it seems like we have a lot of listeners with ADHD, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's actually not remotely surprising to me.
Yeah.
For a ton of reasons yeah. that I'm sure we'll get into.
So for people who don't know, can you give, like, a brief synopsis of, like, what is ADHD and how does it manifest for you?
Yeah, it's very much, I know, particularly in my generation, it was very much brought up as the joke of, like, the ooh, squirrel kind of thing. And that's kind of the cultural understanding we have of it, mm-hmm. is that you're just, like, real distractible and you just, like, have no attention. and that's not quite right. I mean, there certainly are elements of that, to be sure. But so it's a neurological disorder that impacts primarily attention, impulsivity, and restlessness mm-hmm. are kind of like the three core hallmarks of it. And it's not a lack of attention. I have plenty of attention, I promise you. I just can't regulate it for shit. And that impacts a lot of things. One thing I found interesting the more I started looking into ADHD is that there's not a ton we know about what causes it and, like, the biological structures of it, but it seems to be linked very much with dopamine. Mm. So everyone gets bored, right? But a person with ADHD, if they are bored by something, they can... It can feel almost impossible to motivate themselves to do it. Mm-hmm. Boredom is almost intolerable, and folks with ADHD have a relatively low...
threshold.
Thank you. Have a relatively low threshold for it.
Yeah, so when we were talking about doing this episode, one of the things you brought up is that there are a lot of misunderstandings about ADHD, and you touched mm-hmm. on some of them earlier. And one of them that you brought up that I hadn't really thought about that much is people going, wait, but doesn't everyone have that? And I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, you get that a lot, right? Because you talk about, like, wow, you know, I have ADHD, so it's really hard for me to do things I find boring. And people are like, oh, poor baby. Like, it's hard for, like, none of us like doing boring things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I have a really hard time getting motivated to do things. And a lot of people are like, well, yeah, I feel that. And it gets linked to these traits of laziness, right? Because a lot of these are things that are linked to moral failings. Mm-hmm. So it becomes, yeah, I feel that too sometimes, and I work and get over it. And why can't you just work and get over it?
Yeah.
Right? Because you might be climbing a step that is, you know, a foot and a half high, whereas I'm climbing a 3 or 4 foot step because my executive functioning just isn't there that day. It's just not going to cooperate.
Yeah. I see this a lot also with the illnesses that I have, like people who think of, like, folks with depression and say, well, everybody gets mm-hmm. sad sometimes, or they look at people who have like chronic fatigue, like one of the symptoms that I have, and they'll be like, everybody gets tired sometimes, you just need to power through it. And it's like, I understand why you would think that way, but I think like one of the really important things to develop just like as a human in life is the ability to understand that your experience is not the same as everybody else's experience. And like, often if someone says their experience is different from yours, they're often right about that. And like, maybe you should think about that and sit with that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you brought up depression, because there is a really, really high incidence of depression and anxiety in folks with ADHD. And that has a lot to do with a culture that doesn't thoroughly understand ADHD. We're still very much studying it, and that has a lot of this stigma around it and the relatively low rates of diagnosis. So it feels like we're just failing at these things that are very much linked to morality in this culture, right? Particularly Western American culture in, you know, 2020, ideas of like capitalism and production and constantly churning out new ideas and being able to regulate and control our thoughts in a very particular way. And that's just not something my brain is great at. But culture tells us that if you're a hard worker, you can just do those things, right? Or if you care enough, which is another really interesting one, because I can't make my brain care about a thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes there can just be a wall. And like this week, I have something anxiety provoking happening on Friday. Most of the week, haven't been able to focus on shit. That thing isn't going to come faster. There's no prep I can do for it. There's nothing. But my brain's like, we can think about that and feel bad, or we can think about nothing at all. Those are your options. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. God, that sucks. I hope it goes well for you, buddy.
It'll be fine, I'm sure. And what's valuable, though, is that a year ago, if this was happening, I would have no idea that that was what was going on. I would be like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Have I not slept well? Did I not eat right? Which, like, are also certainly things that impact my ability to focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with spoon theory. ADHD folks have a limited number of attention spoons, and depending on factors like, you know, how well you've eaten, how well you've slept, caring, self-care for your body, whatever, you may start with less. But last year, I would have woken up, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week and been like, why is it just not working? Just my brain is just not doing what I tell it to do. Yeah. And I don't know why or what's wrong with me and why I can't do the things that on other weeks I can totally do. And everyone tells me I'm great at. So what do I do with these two realities? Because other times people are telling me I'm not trying hard enough. And I'm like, no, I'm trying equally. It's just a crapshoot of what comes out. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm thinking about this issue so much lately, too, like with my chronic illness, about like how diagnosis can be very validating, even though like there's a lot of criticisms of it as an institution that are really valid, in the sense that like it can be very gatekeepy. It can sort of try to put a name on something that is often more complicated than just, you know, the simple label of a diagnosis. But at the same time, I think knowing tons of people who have chronic illnesses or who have like neuroatypicality in some way, that was a hard word to say. I think like I've seen it be helpful time and time again to get a diagnosis. Because, like, you know, for me this week, I was really thinking about how I feel much more comfortable, like, taking naps in the middle of the day, knowing that I have a chronic illness where fatigue is one of the symptoms, where I used to just be mean to myself when I would feel that urge and be like, okay, you can take a nap, but, like, you're a lazy bitch, so fuck you. And now I'm like,
I guess if you need it.
Yeah, now I'm like, you're a lazy bitch with a chronic illness, so it's actually okay.
Right, yeah, And something about ADHD is I've often described it as my brain feeling like it's on fast forward. So not only do you have the like cultural stigma, your brain is like, well, where's the next thing? Well, where's that next like hit of dopamine? Where's that next thing for me to chew through or be interested in or whatever? So you have this very internal drive also constantly like telling you to hurry up and move and making it hard to like take those moments to pause, and having the diagnosis allowed me to recognize that in myself, or like have the language for what is happening to me. Mm-hmm. And I've heard with ADHD specifically, diagnosis can be particularly helpful. Mm-hmm. Because it is so much, the alternative is, well, am I stupid? Well, am I lazy? Like, right. What am I not? I mean, there's a book called Am I Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid? about ADHD. Or You're Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid. Something along those lines.
Those are my favorite of Snow White's Seven Dwarfs.
Yes.
I'm curious about the attentional stuff. I think that mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you this question later in more of a sexual context because a listener asked it. But I'm curious, like, just in your day-to-day life in terms of work stuff or whatever, if there's something that you're finding boring that you nonetheless have to do, like, have you developed any tricks for making it more, like, sparkly and exciting for yourself so that you can actually do it?
Yes and no. Well, so the first trick is... wait until it's late and now it's an exciting adventure to see if I get it done. Which is like the go-to ADHD response, because the added pressure of stress can almost be as exciting as interest. So procrastination is a big one, and basically what your brain is doing is waiting for it to matter enough to seem worth doing.
Yeah.
So when I fall back, that, like, my fallback is that one. In practice, though, it can be a matter of bribing myself. If it's mindless and boring, maybe I listen to a podcast while I do it, or watch a show or something like that, to almost function as a mental fidget, because this isn't mentally stimulating enough to take up all my bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And if I don't occupy that part of my brain that is prone to wandering with something specific, it'll just go somewhere on its own that might be shinier than the thing I'm working on, and suddenly I have to go Google some answers. So sometimes, and it feels almost like a mental leash for me, right? So I'll do it if I'm doing chores or something like that, where it becomes my one tether, where I'm like hanging on to this one story and focusing on that and letting myself get through all this other stuff that's tedious. Mm-hmm. I could also turn it into like a game, or find something interesting about the thing, right? Give myself a reward at the end or at different like middle points. Find an interesting and inventive way to do it. Sometimes the trick is just getting my brain used to an idea. Because mm-hmm. sometimes it's not quite that it's boring. It's that I have no idea what it will look like to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it'll feel like. I don't know what it entails. And my brain will just put up a block rather than considering those things. Mm-hmm. So when I try a new recipe, if I have a video for it, fantastic. Even if I've read the recipe, I watch the 15-minute process almost as like foreplay for my brain to be like, this is what we're going to be doing next. Doesn't that look fun? Isn't that exciting? And I'll be like, ooh, I do want to knead my bread like that. Thank you. And it's just but if it's a project or something very specific and niche, maybe it's a matter of writing out a list of the steps that it's going to entail.
Mm-hmm. And or like an outline thing, for a writing project.
Exactly. And as I start to do that, I find the things that are, I am curious about it, because mm-hmm. it's what my brain does, right? It's going to keep wandering until it latches onto something. And that's why a lot of people think I have like really clever, insightful things to say about kink, or things they say, wow, no one's ever thought about it that way. It's because my brain is like, well, burn through all the things we hear all the time. Let's look at other weird shit. So yeah, if I can get my feet wet and kind of force my brain to just think about what it would be like to do that thing. We don't have to do it yet, but just think about what it would be like. And then I'll be like, all right, well, I can just do the first step. All right, well, I can just like, well, at this point, I'll just, oh, well, now I gotta. And then I can kind of lure myself into it. Yeah. Other times, it's a matter of doing a bunch of little tasks that are completely unrelated to give myself the dopamine of completion that I can then fuel back into doing a project that sounds scarier or insurmountable. Because it's like, wow, I got six things done already, even mm-hmm. if they were like washing dishes and changing the litter box.
Yeah. That counts for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wondering, since this is a sex and dating show, how does ADHD impact your relationships? And in particular, I know that your partner right now also has ADHD. And I'm wondering, like, because I could see, you know, both potential outcomes of, like, maybe it could be really helpful because you can relate to each other better and understand each other better. But I could also see maybe it could be a problem. How does that work for you?
So it's super helpful for me. It because there is a degree of, I know they get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we might put language to it in different ways, but generally I explain a thing and they go, oh yeah, that feeling. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they can, and I know they can empathize in a way that when I explain things like this to folks without ADHD, they get it conceptually. But, like, I don't know, there's something weird about saying there is an invisible wall between my brain and thinking about that thing, and I don't really know what to do with it. I'm sorry, my brain is slightly out of my own control. like, there is a part of my brain that recognizes how that sounds to someone who doesn't experience it, and maybe it's my own insecurities or what, but, like, I have it feels different than explaining that to someone who is like, oh, yeah, no, that, fuck that wall. I don't get it either. I don't know.
Wall.
Yeah. At the same time, like, we experience very similar struggles and can exacerbate each other's behaviors or wind up in situations where we are both, neither of us have the bandwidth to plan what's gonna happen next.
Yeah.
So we're just like, I guess we're both just in this hole right now and gonna stay here till one of us has energy. But that's honestly, like, super worth it to know that when we have a conversation about that hole that we were just in for a little while, that we're both gonna go, oh yeah, yeah, no, I see what happened there. Yeah, no, that checks out. Yeah. and I'm kind of realizing this now, but 'cause that's how ADHD works. but that they are also willing to get extremely weirdly nerdy about a thing in a way that does not feel neurotypical, or to explain a thing or over communicate, which is a thing I'm told I do a lot.
I like it, but I mean, I'm also an over communicator, so, like, I think that's part of why we're such good friends.
Right. I saw a meme earlier of someone talking about how, like, they explain everything. You know, they say all of the words because they think they can just explain everything in as much detail as possible straight off the bat, which is definitely a thing I do a lot. And, like, so I'll send this, like, long text with all of the details because I'm like, look, I can get it all out of the way right ahead. And then neurotypical folks will message me back with, like, three of the questions that are in the original text. And I'm like, but I thought of 6 million. It's fine.
Yeah.
But knowing someone else who is going to get as nerdy about, like, looking into the details and doesn't mind that kind of very explicit communication, mm-hmm. and knowing their brain also works that way is really comforting, because that's something that I've had a lot of anxiety around, like, being burdensome before.
Yeah, that really reminds me of my experiences dating other people with depression, which, like, when it's good, it's so good because they get you and you don't have to explain shit to them sometimes. but when it's bad, it's so bad, because, like, I would have situations in past relationships where we would both just be so depressed and so depleted of energy, and we would become bad communicators, and we would get into snippy fights with each other over nothing, and we'd be like, you don't understand me. And it's like, we actually do understand each other. That's kind of maybe the problem. So it's like, I wouldn't, you know, swear off it for life, but for me, like, it's not been the best thing. But I'm glad that you've, like, found some tools that have made it, you know, better for you to be with someone who shares your condition. It sounds really nice and healthy.
Yeah, for sure.
We're definitely going to get into this in more detail when we get to the listener questions, but just, like, overall, how does ADHD affect your experience when it comes to sex and kink?
So honestly, I think, like, my ADHD is pretty core to how I move through kink. I mean, my sexuality as well, but specifically how I engage with kink. I mean, thrill-seeking and seeking out novel experiences and just stimulation-seeking, high-stim activities are all very common traits for folks with ADHD. There's a lot of talk about folks with ADHD doing, like, extreme sports and, like, skydiving and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, kink fits in that bubble, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, you want to hang me upside down and hit me with heavy things. Like, that's... I'm not saying you could diagnose someone based on it. However... I don't know. Yeah. I think there's a fairly high incidence of ADHD folks in the kink scene.
Well, I mean, interestingly, I think it also gives you a venue in which to channel your impulses toward extreme nerdiness and hyperfocus, mm-hmm. because, like, we're inundated with info all the time about vanilla sex. Like, we kind of know already by default a fair bit about how vanilla sex works, but with a kink thing, you can dive in, you can watch the Kink Academy videos, you can read the articles and the books, like, you can go really deep on it. And I could see how that could be appealing to that kind of brain.
Absolutely. And it's also a community that is built around over-communication, right? yeah. And not necessarily in, like, the negative way, but in, you know, we talk a lot about shit. We are also hella nerdy. Like, we like digging into the bottom and just thinking about things in weird and interesting ways.
You said digging into the bottom. I'm sorry. Also that, yeah.
Also that, yes. and thinking about sex in weird and creative ways. So I definitely don't think I would be the kinkster I was if I didn't have ADHD. Mm-hmm. That said, impulsivity, not always the best trait when we're talking about sex and kink. Mm-hmm. Definitely one of the easiest ways I can get myself into trouble, because sex is very much one of those, like, ooh, shiny impulsivity things that I'm like, this is a decision I'm making that I guess I'll deal with the consequences later. and not to say, like, murky ethical things, but more in terms of, like, well, this will certainly be interesting in my interpersonal relationships moving forward. or this will certainly lead to some interesting conversations in my life. and that's definitely something that I've, struggled with and will continue to struggle with into the future, I'm sure. But again, just something to be helpful to be very aware of, right? Because in the past, I didn't necessarily have the language for it, but now I'm like, of course, the dopamine of, like, warm fuzzy sex feelings and flirting and touch and attention is, like, a little bit irresistible sometimes. Like, yeah, that makes sense with everything I know about my brain.
Yeah, one tip I've been hearing a lot lately from a lot of different kink educators is the idea of, like, because so many people are like, how do I surprise my partner or make a scene feel, you know, unexpected without violating consent? And one thing I hear mm-hmm. often lately is, like, if there's two or three things you want to do, then you negotiate six or eight things, mm-hmm. and those things are in there. So you know that they're okay to do, but your partner doesn't necessarily know exactly what you're going to do. And I could see how that could be a useful tool in this situation, because it allows for improvisation, but you've already set up these boundaries where, like, it's all okay within the consent structure you've built.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love doing things like that. And setting up structures like that definitely give me a little bit of freedom and flexibility within my scenes. I think for me, the impulsiveness tends to manifest outside of scenes themselves. When I'm in the moment in scenes, I can find myself kind of get into that flow state, but more just, I'm like, you're real cute, this is gonna cause drama.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of interesting gender dynamics within the ADHD world. Like, my understanding is folks raised as boys are, like, much more likely to be diagnosed with this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, I've heard that, like, folks raised as girls, like, often will have a hard time getting diagnosed or, like, may need, you know, longer term to figure it out. But I think you have a really interesting perspective on this being trans, and I'm curious if you could speak to ADHD's interaction with testosterone and with your gender.
Yeah. So, yeah, generally folks who are raised and socialized as women are have a lower rate of diagnosis. And the links in that tend to be because folks socialized as women, their symptoms tend to manifest more inwardly. They're the kid that is like the space cadet sitting in the back of the room, daydreaming, staring out the window. Whereas the boy with ADHD is your very stereotypical, or cliche, I guess, kid with ADHD, like what everyone kind of culturally thinks of, you know, very distractible, very hyperactive, loud, rambunctious, and that's disruptive as hell. And adults don't like that. So they notice it and try to fix it.
Right.
The kid who's staring out the window just needs to try a little bit harder, just needs to focus more.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, it doesn't get recognized as much. What I found interesting, so looking back, because I was not diagnosed until after I started T, but I did notice, and obviously there was also a lot of other things going on in my life at the time, but it did feel like my symptoms, but it did feel like the way my ADHD was manifesting was shifting as I started, you know, taking T, and, you know, that first year or so, it's more or less stabilized now. But I do feel like that hyperactivity is much more present in a way that it wasn't. And I mean, there could be a degree of confirmation bias here, right? But I do feel like I have a lot more energy that I'm genuinely, like, need to put somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's also very true, because I've stopped working retail. So I'm not on my feet all day, and I'm not talking to people all day.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of energy that is just not burnt up there. But I did feel that, and there is also, some irritability associated with ADHD. So they can have mood swings, or we can have mood swings, fly off the handle, that sort of thing. It happens a lot if we are distracted out of a hyperfocus. So in the same way, because we have trouble regulating our attention, I may not be able to focus on anything at all. Sometimes I can only focus on one thing. Whether or not I want to be focusing on that one thing, it is literally all I will care about, which is also excruciating. But in those moments, if I'm hyper-focused on something and someone comes over to me, they could be bringing me my favorite dinner on a platter in, like, the cutest outfit and be like, here you go. And I'd be like, the fuck is that? Leave me alone. I'm busy. And, like, 3 minutes later, I'm like, no, I would like that. Please come back. Hang on. But I describe it to my partner as being a little prickly, because, like, if sometimes you'll just lash out because you're not prepared to be ripped away from this thing that is literally your entire world in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just like, hey, this is interesting. And my brain puts on the back burner, like, oh, that homework I have and that thing I have to do for work that are all boring, like, let's ignore those and focus on this fun new video game. But it's also putting, like, you have to pee and you haven't eaten in, like, a day and a half, and, like, that sleep thing, you're tired, like, those are also all on the back burner. Because it's like, no, you have to get to the end of this quest, though.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you have to get to the end of this BuzzFeed article that you stopped caring about a while ago, but you started it, and it's a list, and you have to get to the end before you're going to be able to do anything, or you have to get to the top of your Twitter feed. You just do. You just, you have to get to the end, or you're not going to be able to do anything else until you do, and it's maddening sometimes.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great. It sounds like it could lead to some unhealthy behaviors, but also I know that some of my periods of like getting really obsessed with certain things have been some of my like happiest and most vibrant moments.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really, it can be a double-edged sword, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can, you know, look back through my life and my hyperfocuses have all been like the things I'm passionate about. I mean, sexuality and kink have been hyperfocuses of mine and I've made careers out of them. Mm-hmm. I've learned all kinds of really fascinating things just because I hyperfocused on it for an afternoon and now spent 8 hours just having knowledge about this thing. So it's super cool. And there are a lot of people who describe it as like a superpower when you can engage it. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I did before this call, right? We were going to record this episode and you were like, hey, I'm low energy. And I was like, hey, my brain is also not cooperating. I'm going to spend several hours listening to this book because I know ADHD is something that fascinates me. And if I engage my hyperfocus, I'll be able to, like, speak to it and have a lot of thoughts about it. But if I hadn't done that, this would have been a very different call because my brain would have just been like, no, I definitely know things about that. Certainly have had opinions and thought about it before. Don't know where it is. Somewhere.
Our listeners had a lot of questions about this. Very interesting ones.
Excellent.
The first one, I think, is probably the most common one. There was, like, a bunch of different versions of this that came in, and it was, like, how do you handle distraction or focus issues during sex? And one person even said that they're curious about distraction making it so that you can't even focus enough to reach orgasm during sex. And I was wondering if you mm-hmm. have any thoughts on that.
So, I mean, my first answer is pain, but that's not helpful for everyone. but also for me, this is not something I have struggled with a ton because sex is so much of a hyper-focus for me, so mm-hmm. I'm able to tap into that. And for me, the way that manifests is when I'm fucking someone, I have found so many things to find interesting in that moment. I'm like regulating little things like how their muscles are like moving and twitching and are they leaning into me or away from me and how did their breath catch and what part of their body am I touching with which parts of my body right now. Like there are so many logistics to engage that for me, I find I'm able to be endlessly curious about it and engage in that way. So if that's something you can do, if you can just start asking yourself questions of like, well, okay, well, what parts of my body are touching what parts of their body? And how many of those can I make feel good? Right? Like,
yeah.
You know, because there have definitely been times where I'm just like, oh, I didn't realize that the way we're laying, like, that part of my hip is against their junk. I guess I'm learning to grind at a sideways 30-degree angle with rhythm today. because, like, I happen to know that's a part of this person's body that feels good, right? And it just becomes a whole puzzle for me. Mm-hmm. So if you were able to, like, engage that excitement and curiosity, that might help. Other things I've heard can be helpful is having a playlist, especially if you have one that is like a part of your routine that you always fall back to that you can have kind of Pavlovian sexy feelings about, that you can use as like that leash I was talking about earlier, right? That one constant that can keep your focus in the moment but not occupy too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's also porn on in the background or something like that, so that when you float away, you're floating towards something that still feels sexy for you.
Mm-hmm.
Minimizing distractions in your room, right? If your brain wants to float away and there is a full thing of laundry next to the bed, well, it's going to float there, and that's not something that's going to get your dick hard. But if, you know, your mind floats and, like, your closet doors are closed, so you're just floating around a space that also makes you feel good and warm and fuzzy in, you know, maybe you have sexy art around or whatever, that can also kind of reinforce that. Timing when you have sex, at a time when you know your focus is better. Your brain has cycles throughout the day. We all know some of us work better at certain times. We're hornier at certain times. So leaning into kind of your own natural rhythms, giving yourself space to float away for a second and come back, and allowing your partner to be your partner in this, communicating with them what it is that your brain does, and having kind of a shorthand to be like, hey, I need to be brought back, or hey, like, and a way to kind of recenter yourself in that moment, and not feeling guilty for floating away and doing that thing that your brain does, and not feeling like you're failing or you must not be that into it, or it must be bad sex if I'm getting distracted and thinking about, you know, dinner or whatever. Just recognize that that's the thing that your brain does, and finish your thought about dinner and then come back to that ass, because it's probably more interesting.
Yeah, the thing about bad sex is so real. Like, in, like, pretty much if you have any condition that distracts you at all from sex, like whether it's chronic pain or depression or anxiety or ADHD or, like, literally whatever, I think our culture has so much of a strong narrative of, like, if it's good sex, you'll be into it no matter what. And it can be really difficult to unlearn that. And, like, I've had a lot of guilt about saying to partners, like, I'm really sorry, I'm actually just too distracted by what's going on for me to really focus on this well. Like, what helps me with that is the addition of weed, but I think it's also perfectly valid to just be like, this isn't a great time for me to be doing this, and it's great if you can have a partner who understands that they don't need to take that personally.
Yeah. Also, fantasy. Like, if your mind is gonna wander to other sexy shit. Like, that's also not a failure, but it's another thing that there's a lot of stigma around, fantasizing maybe about someone who isn't your partner or about a scenario you're not actively in that moment. But it can be fun and hot.
Yeah, a lot of people have a lot of guilt about that and think it's weird. And I understand that, because if you're hiding from your partner the fact that you think about other people in other situations, there's a chance that that would upset them if they found out about it. But, like, I've been lucky enough to have partners who understood that that was just another tool in our toolbox of, like, getting me turned on and making the experience more enjoyable. And I've even had partners who, like, encouraged me to think about whatever I wanted. And that just is such a gift to me. Like, I just found that so delightful.
Yeah.
One listener is wondering, how and when do you disclose your condition to new dates? And is this something that's important to do?
So for me, it is very important. I don't think it's morally or ethically important. I don't think you're obligated to, like, disclose or share this with a partner. I do think it's convenient, and will probably make your life easier, and would recommend it. Like anything I disclose, my transness, my queerness, my perviness, any of that shit, generally I do it right up front, because I wear that shit on my sleeve. That's shit everyone knows about me. If you're gonna be weird about it, that's information I want early. Because it's not something that you're not going to encounter in spending time with me. So, like, I use it as a way to vet, and it tells me everything I need to... Well, it tells me a lot of what I need to know about the person I'm with as well when I mention it, and given who I am and the spaces I move in, I usually, and to be clear, when I disclose that I have ADHD, I do not sit down in a dark room and say, I have to talk to you about something. Turns out I have ADHD. It's just,
everyone's honestly crying. It's just, there's dramatic music playing.
The test came back positive. No, generally, I say some stupid shit and go, yeah, well, so the way my ADHD manifests, XYZ happens. And I am already contextualizing something that they've experienced, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm making a casual joke, you know, well, my ADHD ass, I'll take twice as long, but it's fine, we'll get there. you know, or we'll put it off to the last minute, but it's okay, it'll get done eventually. And things like that, to just kind of casually throw it out in the world and let it be known, because it's I don't have time to hide it, and I'm not good at it. We struggle with working memory. We struggle with, like, holding several pieces in our mind while we're doing other projects, unless we have that hyper-focus engaged. Mm. Lying requires holding lots of thoughts in my mind. Or, like, withholding information. Like, that requires remembering who knows what. I'm not good at it. Don't have time. Don't want to spend the energy on it.
Yeah. Yeah, this mirrors advice I've heard you give also about disclosing anything from your kinks to your STI status to having depression. Like, it is going to seem like a bigger, scarier thing if you make the conversation into a big, scary conversation. And, like, I've definitely taken that to heart in recent years. Like, I do think I used to kind of, you know, I remember having a few conversations early on and dating certain partners where it would be like, what should I need to know about you? Like, what's really important for us to know about each other before we proceed? And I would always be like, well, I have depression. It manifests in these ways. I know it's hard. And it's like, now I just do basically what you just said, where it'll just come up in a story. Like, I'll be like, I don't know, I was having kind of a bad depression day, so this happened. And it's just, it just, you know, shows that I'm chill about it, and it models that other people can be chill about it too.
Yeah, and so often I get, oh, same. So, like, and then we have a new thing to talk about.
Yeah, it's great. This is an interesting question. I'm wondering, I don't know enough about this to know whether this is based on, like, an actual stereotype that exists in the world. But someone asked, do you think that people with ADD or ADHD are more likely to cheat on their partners?
So I don't know to what extent that's, like, a stereotype. This is a very interesting question for me too, because, like, I mean, I don't want to say yes, because again, that, like, this is something that is heavily linked to morality, right? And is seen as a moral failing. Mm-hmm. However, ADHD folks are prone to impulsivity and, hypersexuality. And chasing shiny fun things and not great at thinking about the consequences at the end. Mm-hmm. Not the best formula for monogamy. That is not to say that a person will necessarily act on those things, or doesn't have the willpower. But I can also see how ADHD will make could make monogamy difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Cheating can happen in non-monogamy as well. Mm-hmm. But how I think cheating is often something that happens in a split-second decision.
Right.
And it's the kind of thing that you wind up in a situation and you're like, well, I guess I'm doing this. I guess this is here where we are. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly a feeling I am familiar with as a person with ADHD. So while I don't want to say that, you know, they're more likely to, or your ADHD is going to make you, there are certainly traits within the ADHD brain that are, like, conducive to that kind of behavior. But there are also those traits in lots of other brains. So, like, I don't know that it would be enough to be, like, statistically relevant, or to be like, them fucking ADHD folks, I'm not gonna date any of them. They're all dirty, rotten cheaters. Like, it's not a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's, like, many conditions that you might logically think would lead someone to potentially cheat more. But the thing is, like, there's always factors that, like, could make someone cheat or could make them less likely to cheat. And I think, like, overall, you just have to know whether or not you trust your partner. And I think that that's, like, a separate thing from whatever conditions and other factors they may have. Because like you said, like this condition doesn't like overwrite your sense of morality and what matters to you and your values. It's just like it might complicate some of those decisions. And I also think like, you know, if your partner cheated on you and they were like, sorry, it was my ADHD. Like, I don't think you need to give them a free pass on that. I don't think you need to be like, that's fine. Like, they still did a shitty thing. It would be a shitty thing regardless of like what their reasoning is, I think.
Right. I think for me, like, it's the kind of thing that is useful to recognize in a conversation with a partner after something has happened. Mm-hmm. That, like, your impulsivity in that moment did not help the situation, and it was one of many factors that contributed to you making this decision, and that can impact how I feel about this decision. Alongside things like how you reacted after the decision was made, how this conversation has been going so far, right? How you've been acting in our relationship beforehand. Like, those are all relevant things. And that is another factor that may have contributed to the experience or what happened, you know? Right. So I think it is useful information to have and consider if you were in a situation where this has happened, but not super relevant if you're like, I have an ADHD partner, so they are 20% more likely to cheat on me, must watch them at all times. Like, no.
Yeah. I have a question about planning scenes, which I know is something you love to do. This person was asking, how can I plan scenes well when I forget what I enjoy or what my partner enjoys as a result of ADHD?
Have reference documents. like, not
the
even
mating
kidding.
Call of the Virgo.
yeah, honestly. No, not even kidding. So when I'm planning, like, my really complicated scenes, I have a shared doc. I have a yes, no, maybe list, like, on file that I can pull up for my partner at any given time, and just, like, check things, which is, like, my starting point. It's not always totally up to date, it's not always, there are, like, some things that are on the list that I'm like, yeah, but what if we do it in this type of way, or what if, you know, with this different spin on it, but if I have, and this is when I'm doing like a big fancy role play scene, right? Something big and exciting coming up. I will open up a document and just start throwing notes in it. Anytime I think of an idea for a thing I want to do, and then as it gets closer, I will like move it into like maybe a, you know, whatever structure I'm going to do. I will jot notes for like questions I have in there sometimes so I can find tricksy ways to get the answers. Like, oh, one day, how do you feel about XYZ idea? And if it is like an enthusiastic yes, I'm like, great. Versus like, that's more talk. I'll be like, all right, that, you know, maybe that goes in this other scene. So I have one, like, home for all of my thoughts, and then can, like, scroll back through all of these other little snippets of ideas that I've had, and ask a lot of questions, and remind myself a lot. If you can find new and creative ways to ask about the things that turn your partner on, it's not gonna necessarily get boring. Like, I don't get tired of hot people being like, what makes your dick hard? Like, that's, I'm generally fairly happy answering that question to people who are gonna put their mouth on it in the near future. Like, that's
yeah, I think that all of that is great advice for anybody, actually. Like, I wish that more people would keep records and documents of this kind of thing, even though a lot of people think it's super nerdy and weird, because the thoughtfulness cannot be overstated of like when someone remembers something that you said you liked briefly months ago, or that you mentioned once that you were interested in trying. It just, I don't even think it diminishes it if they wrote it down and that's how they remembered it. I still think it's incredibly thoughtful and leads to better sex.
And that's the beautiful thing about the ADHD brain, is that it can latch on to, like, those weird little, like, snippets. Like, the first scene I had with my partner, 2 weeks before, they had retweeted someone talking about, using Twizzlers as an impact toy. So when we had our scene, and as part of the scene, like, stopped at a drugstore to get snacks, I had them pick up a thing of Twizzlers, and they didn't even notice. And then we got to the end of the night, and I was like, oh, by the way, they are in within reach, and I, like, playfully hit them with a couple. And they were like, that's the kind of weird thing that, because my focus is on random, I saw that and was like, ah, this is very interesting. Must delve further into this. and it was to be able to have this, like, cute little tie-in later. I probably threw something very important completely by the wayside and didn't even read it in the meantime. But it was fun.
Yeah. Sometimes that's what matters.
Yeah.
One last question. As someone who does not have ADHD, what can a person do to support their partner who does have it?
So this is a big one. The first and biggest one I would say is learn about ADHD. It's a really wide-reaching kind of thing that impacts a lot of different areas. So just having that working knowledge about how things in your partner's brain might work can be really helpful and just get you on the same page and with, like, kind of a mutual understanding of what's happening, the way Joellen talks about having it be you and your partner against the depression versus the other way around. I don't honestly think folks should really be working against ADHD, because as much as I talked about all of the ways that it really, really frustrates me, it's also, like, very core to who I am, like, as a person and how I move through the world, and I rather like me. so I'm, like, I wouldn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
I like, a lot of the things are like, ah, my brain works in a way that the world isn't built for. Not necessarily wrong. There are some things where my brain is like, the fuck are you doing? That is very wrong. But other times, I'm just like, ah, that is not a way of working that's particularly helpful for 2020 capitalistic Western society. But other ways and other times, it would be super valuable. So just kind of understanding what's going on in their minds. The other thing that ADHD folks find incredibly helpful and important is structure and routines. I'm a Virgo, but my whole life people have been talking about how much I organize things and all of my lists and all of, like, my, you know, my systems and my routines. I'm like, wow, I wish I could be like that. And, like, yes, I enjoy them, and also I can't turn them off. I can't not have them, because if I don't, everything falls apart, and I will literally forget things like brushing my teeth and eating.
Mm-hmm.
So helping set up those structures for routines, helping set up systems of reminders, helping them maintain their to-do lists, being kind of an outside source of accountability and, like, follow-up, all of those things can be really helpful. You obviously want to caution against, like, constantly nagging someone.
Mm-hmm.
But being an accountability buddy and being kind of a force outside their own head can be very helpful. Something I found really, really interesting while I was reading Driven to Distraction is the author cautioned against a master-slave dynamic. Not in a kink way at all. It's just like falling into this dynamic where, you know, one person is constantly bossing the other person around or living at the whims of, and they were like, and that exchange can go either way, with, like, the ADHD person constantly, like, barking and the other person kowtowing to their moods and impulsiveness, or constantly shoving the inattentive person around. And also spoke to how important it is that you be conscious of, like, the power imbalances and the dynamics that are present in your relationship, which I do agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think kink and power exchange and things like protocol and service and that kind of structure can be incredibly helpful for ADHD brains. Because obviously your focus is very deeply tied to not only what you remember but and understand, but what you see. Like, I think we've all seen those tests where you, like, count how the ball moves and you don't see the person in the fursuit run across the screen because you weren't looking for it. So ADHD brains may not notice or see some of the subtler clues that other folks are relying on to move through the world. That's why a lot of us are sometimes come across as awkward, because we're noticing just as many things as you are. They are just not the ones that, like, society has prioritized noticing, and everyone else subtly learned that, yes, those are the things I pay attention for. We're like, I'm paying attention for all of the things and none of them all at the same time. Sometimes we don't notice the, like, implicit social cues that maybe this person doesn't want to keep hearing about our latest hyperfocus. So I find the structure and the rules that go into kink dynamics and power exchange particularly extremely comforting, because it creates this dynamic where I know the rules of the game. I know how we're going to communicate things. All of that is built in, so I don't necessarily feel like I'm constantly trying to learn something that no one else had to be told, but I was never told, and I can't figure it out. I don't know how y'all got it, but I don't know.
Wow, yeah, a lot of good stuff in there. Thank you, Bean, for sharing your perspectives with us today. Yeah, I think that's it. I've been Kate Sloan. I have a blog at girlyjuice.net. I have a lot of other writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. And I have another podcast currently on hiatus, but what I actually started to say was Oasis, which is not the same thing. it's on hiatus, but there's a big backlog. It's called Question Box. Where is your stuff?
Imagine recording a Question Box episode at Oasis.
Yeah, I'm just, like, sitting in a hot tub. That actually seems like the ideal place, except that there would be, like, a lot of drunk, horny people trying to pop in.
Sometimes there are drunk, horny people running that show. It's fine.
It's true. It's very true.
As someone who has drank with both of you.
Don't tell them. It's a secret.
Anyway, I'm Bex. I have also written things at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. I've also started getting naked on the internet a whole lot more. It's my current hyperfocus. So, like, if you want to go over and follow at Billy Lore on Twitter, there's just a whole lot of my dick over there. So I guess that's a thing you're excited about. You could also go to patreon.com/stilldorks, where there is not my dick, just a lot of me talking about it, and our Patreon-exclusive hypothetical episodes, where we get really high and talk about lots of silly things, including but not exclusively my dick.
Can I suggest a new tagline for your brand?
Yeah.
Putting the D in ADHD. I think it works.
I am, though.
Thank you to Protodome for the use of his wonderful song, I Want You in My Bedroom, as our theme song. Check out his new album, Super Chip Funk. I listened to it, like, several times through the other day, and I was just bopping. It was, like, a low-energy day, and I had to get through the work day, and it was just the perfect thing. Like, it was exactly... I actually kind of wonder if ADHD brains might enjoy it as kind of a background fidget.
So I was just going to say, part of what I've been finding really, really helpful in quarantine is, like, really stimmy electronic music. Mm-hmm. I tend to listen to a lot of, like, bass-heavy... there's a playlist called Nasty Bits.
just, sounds great.
And a bunch of other, like, ridiculous filthy titles on Spotify, Bass Arcade and, like, stuff like that. But I find those playlists to be really great for that, like, mindless stimmy things, and I could see that album working similarly.
Yeah, so Protodome's on Bandcamp. He's also on Spotify. I would imagine he's elsewhere as well. And thank you to Amy. She did our logo. She is at Starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye. That I want you in the morning.
Sorry, I'm having a brain fog day and you're having an ADHD day, and we're just gonna have to fight our way through this. I feel like that's just the story of our lives lately. Okay.